Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part 2 of episode number 238 of my 16 music podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. Hello, so first of all, I'd like to welcome all of you to part 2 of episode number 238 of my 16 music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Blames, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or on Stitcher, or on iHeartRadio, or on Google Podcasts, which is soon to be taken over by YouTube Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is this? I'm just give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Blames. And I am a 28-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a 60 music fan slash expert slash nerd. In each week of this podcast, I take one song by one artist who's 60 split show in two parts. First part, I talk about my opinion song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, into my own personality on the range of the song, which will include the chorus, melody, and lyrics. The second part, I dig deep into the history behind that track. In that part, I talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded. I talk about the session players that played on the song, songwriters that wrote the song, produced it, and the peak position song, way version of Billboard Hot 100 charts first came out, history behind the songwriters that wrote the song, produced it, and the year and month the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on to this week's episode of this podcast, I wanted to kind of give you guys an update on what's going on with me and my music and, just what I've been experiencing lately. Because it's been both a combination of good and bad, but it kind of is what it is, to be honest with you guys. The first thing I want, actually do want to make a very cool announcement before I get into this week's episode. What I want to say is that I officially launched a brand new merch store for the premium version of my podcast. I launched a new line of lots and lots of stuff. I have a new Red Bull merch store, and the logo, which is really, really cool, is the catch slogan, "Fly on the Wall Stories." It looks a little different than keep things groovy slogan, but it still looks very, very cool, because what it is that it's a slogan, "Fly on the Wall Stories," but it has a record right next to it. So it kind of gives the aesthetic of Fly on the Wall Stories on some of the greatest records of all time. There's a little, vinyl record, and then there's a little needle drop right next, on top of the vinyl record. And right next to it is the catchphrase, "Fly on the Wall Stories." It looks very, very cool. And it does give that aesthetic of, what you'll get for the premium version of this podcast is "Fly on the Wall Stories" and some of the greatest records ever made, which is really, really cool. Of course, I'll link that in the text description as episode of this podcast. That way you guys can check it out. It's just another way you can support me, other than subscribing to the premium version of this podcast. To be honest with you guys, since merch typically is more expensive than the premium version of my podcast, if you guys buy merch, you really would be helping me out financially big time. So I really, really appreciate it if you could go on there and buy something from the store. But what's really cool is I have two merch stores now for the podcast, the free version, Keep Things Groovy, and the premium version, which is, Fly on the Wall Stories. And I really, really think that logo pretty much encapsulates exactly what you'll be getting for the premium version of this podcast. It's so cool because, it's literally all these guys I'm talking to, they were all flies on the wall back then, and they were there, and they were actually in the thick of the recording scene back in the 60s, and they really had an inside look on, just what was going on back then. It's really, really cool. But yeah, so that's one thing. The other thing I want to talk about with you guys is what's going to happen with my next EP. The thing is about my next EP, guys, is that I found out how much it's going to cost for me to record it. Okay, and it's a lot of money, guys. For me, it's money I certainly don't have. you know, it's quite a big chunk of change. And I'm looking through my options right now in terms of how I'm able going to come up with the money to record this next EP. If I wanted to go to the studio and record it, and the thing is that with this next EP, is that it's going to cost me $3,000 to record it, and that includes production, mixing, and mastering. But what it doesn't include is how much studio musicians are going to cost. I don't know how much that's going to be. So with that being said, I did create a crowdfunding campaign, you know, for it, but I haven't shared it yet because I don't know how much session players are going to cost. And I also haven't shared it yet because there's a chance that I may be able to get a grant to record this next EP, because there is an organization called the Recording Fund, and they do give out grants to independent artists so that way they can go in the studio to record their music. So I may explore that option as well. So I haven't shared the crowdfunding campaign on my social media pages yet for those two reasons alone. So yeah, so that's what's happening with that. I'm still working on the arrangements for these songs, guys. You know, it's taken me a while to do that, especially with the cover of the Paul Over and the Raiders song never came out. It's taken me a minute to flesh out the arrangement for that song, but I'm chipping away at it, you know, whenever I can get to it, you know, as well as the other songs. Because right now it's pretty much four songs that I'm pretty sure and solid I want to get to recording for the next EP. And just to give you guys a little perspective on the current state of the music business about just that number, that $3,000 to record an EP, right? If I want to make all that money back and passive income, like just royalties, you know, earned from my music, if I want to make all that money back just from streams alone, I would have to get at least 1 million streams to make all that money back, right? And to be honest with you guys, most artists don't get 1 million streams, especially on Spotify. Most of them don't. It's very rare for artists to get at least 1 million streams for their songs. And a lot of times it doesn't happen unless, you know, they have a label or, you know, they do a certain specific style of music. But, you know, most artists don't get 1 million streams on a streaming platform. They just don't. So that's the other thing. So just so you guys know, it's very rare for an artist to get 1 million streams on Spotify. But if I get some placements with those songs, I could easily make that money back and possibly more as well. So that's the other thing you have to keep in mind. So, but yeah, so that's currently what's going on with me, guys. I also just unfortunately experienced a tragedy with my family. My sister just experienced a stillbirth. So that's been very hard on me and my mom and my dad. But it's been difficult, but I you know, but the other thing is that with stillbirths is that, you know, there's nothing we could have done to prevent it. And also, it's unlikely that will happen again. She'll probably have another baby and it'll be successful. So, but it is hard because I could have had a nephew as well as a niece. I mean, I have a niece, but I could have had a nephew too, but that just didn't work out. But I think the next time she has a baby, it'll work out, and hopefully it'll be a boy, so that way it could be like my family, you know, my sister and me could be just like that with my sister and her family. So, but yeah, so that's kind of what I've been experiencing lately. And, you know, I also got burned by a couple girls recently and got rejected by them, so that's been very difficult. But on the positive side, I actually did get to introduce a podcast guest, an old one, to one of my really good friends, and that was really cool. I got to make his dream come true because he's a really big fan of Elvis, and then got to introduce him to someone that worked closely with Elvis and sing background for him as well. So that was really cool. So that's kind of been my week, guys. Just been ups and a little bit of ups, mostly down. So it's been kind of hard for me lately. But, you know, the ups being that I launched a new merch store for the Freedom Version podcast, and that I get to introduce a friend to an old podcast guest I had on. And, you know, just been, you know, trying to, you know, stay positive here because it's been a downer for me for a while. But yeah, so anyways, let's get started in this week's show. Moving on, let's get started on talking about the last artist I talked about in my podcast and last group I talked about and last song I talked about, which is Sorry from Rare Bad Trashman. And let me actually kind of just give you guys a little preface here. So, this song, Surf and Burn, despite how horrible it is, it's not great. It falls under a very specific style of music that some of you may be familiar, some of you may not be. And that style of music is punk rock. Now, when we think of punk rock, we often associate that genre with tons of late 70s bands, you know, like the Ramones and, the group that did God Save the Queen, just a bunch of the Sex Pistols. That's what I was thinking. I'm sorry, I'm totally blanking on their name. But, you know, bands like that, we often think, you know, the Stooges, we often think of bands from the early 70s like Stooges, MC5 to, Sex Pistols and, Ramones and groups like that. That's when most people think of punk rock, they think of those specific genres. But again, punk rock is another one of those genres that surprisingly got start in the early 60s. Most notably with the Sonics, but even before that, you had groups like the Trashmen, who were kind of like one of the earliest examples of punk rock. Now, it's hard to say exactly, you know, how punk rock originated, but I have a feeling that, it kind of stemmed from the origins of true, you know, balls to the wall, like, you know, pure unadulterated rock and roll. I mean, you know, what we think of like Elvis, Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, Fats Domino, Little Richard, that kind of music where it was just like screaming and like, you know, 12-bar blues progressions, you know, real heavy guitars and piano, heavy drums, you know, just what we think of, just the beginning of rock and roll, which happened in the mid-50s, right? I would say that that's where it got started, right? And, you know, of course, you know, there's people say that, oh, before that it was, you know, Louis Jordan and that whole thing, like just, you know, jump blues and, you know, that sort of thing. And yes, that was sort of a precursor to rock and roll, was that kind of music. And then when rock and roll developed, it just exploded. But I think that the main thing about punk rock is just the attitude with it, which is sort of this I don't give a shit attitude, just like really, really just like, and the sort of angry, sort of like really, bitter attitude with it. And I think that was sort of happening in the 50s. But I think where punk rock pulled from when it comes to 50s rock and roll is the high energy sort of, vocal performances, the screaming, you know, the wailing of, you know, artists like Little Richard, and the real high energy, playing of those, of, you know, the guitars and the saxophones. Because if you think of a song like Little Richard, like You Keep It Knockin', which is a big hit for him in 1950s, you think of that song, Keep It Knockin', and then you look at some, you know, some punk rock songs, you'll hear kind of a similarity between, like, you know, just the screaming that he did and the high energy vocals and the real high energy playing on those songs. But I think the difference here is that punk rock was more stripped down. It was more guitar, bass, drums, but it definitely had its origins from, like, you know, rhythm and blues from the 50s and, you know, rhythm and blues involving into rock and roll. That's kind of where it originated from, except the attitudes with punk were slightly different than ones that, you know, the rock and roll attitudes, but it was, again, very, very similar styles of music. But anyways, let's talk about the history behind, song Surf and Bird by Trashmen. So let's talk about the Trashmen for a minute. So the Trashmen consisted of guitarist Tony Anderson, Dal Winslow, bassist Bob Reeve, and drummer Steve Ward. Those are the core members of the Trashmen. They were actually a surf rock group, guys. But the weird part about them being a surf rock group is that they came from nowhere near Southern California. They actually came from Minnesota, and they're from Minneapolis originally. And the band started out with members Tony Anderson and Mike Jan, who were friends and they learned how to play guitar together starting in 1955. And they mostly played country music. And then in 57 at the Crystal Coliseum, Tony and Mike met Steve Warr and drummer Dallas Dal Winslow, who was a guitar player and saxophone player. And then Tony, Steve, and Dal, the saxophone player, played as the String Kings for a brief time period. And Mike wasn't part of the group due to being more interested in country music. And that's when Tony met Jim Faster through Steve and Dale. Jim was a singer who was looking for to front a band. And the group was called Jim Faster and the Travelers. Was then formed the following lineup. Jim Faster on lead vocals and guitar. And then he went into bass guitar. Tony Anderson on lead guitar. Dal Winslow on rhythm guitar. Tom Dal on piano. And Steve Warr on drums. And then spring of 61, the group took a break and Tony and Jim had to go to the military. In February, March 62, the two reunited. However, disagreements in musical direction between the two caused Tony to leave the band and Steve and Dal left with them. So that's sort of the formation of how the Trash Men came to be. Don Wood, a bass player, joined the group and Steve made a decision to call the band the Trash Men. When a friend of his, Don, showed them an album by guitarist Tony Cure, alias Kai Ray, called the Trashman's Blues. The group is primarily an instrumental group with occasional lead vocals by Steve. But then Steve began to sing more and more. And Tony also occasionally sang lead. And Don left the band, was replaced by Bob Reed. And then next thing you know, you had the nucleus of the Trashmen. And then then they actually got more interest in surf rock after they listened to Dick Dale. And then the song Surfin' Bird came to be, which is recorded in a studio in Minneapolis called K-Bank Studios. And K-Bank Studios was the biggest recording studio in Minneapolis, Minnesota at that point. And it was a huge studio in Minneapolis and, the biggest studio in Minnesota at that point. And they already had a little bit of success. I think Mule Skinner Blues by the Fendermen was a pretty big hit that was recorded in that studio. But it would be a while before the studio would have another big hit. I think the next big hit they would have was a song called 6 Days on the Road by Dave Dudley. But then came this song, a song called Surfin' Bird, which was arguably one of the biggest hits to have been recorded at K-Bank Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota. After this song, the next big hit that was recorded in the studio was a song called Liar Liar by the Castaways. The other thing I want to mention to you guys about the Minnesota scene, and this is very important about this sort of scene, It was either one of two things. It was either hillbilly, very white trash country music, just that sort of like real sort of like that kind of music, right? That sort of that, you know, that was what was coming out of Minnesota at that point. Or it was garage rock. That's sort of the what was happening in Minnesota at that point. And obviously, when you think of Mule Skinner Blues by the Fendermen, that's a very good example of hillbilly country music, as well as 6 Days in the Road by Dave Dudley, which is a trucker song. Like, it's probably one of the biggest, first big hits to, you know, about a guy driving a truck, which is typical of, you know, the country music lifestyle. It was one of the first big trucker song of that era, followed by many, many more songs within the country genre that are about truckers, but that was one of the first big trucker songs to come out and become a huge hit. But anyways, let's talk about Surfin' Bird now. So here's where last week's song, or the last song talked about, ties into Black History Month. So one thing you may not know about Surfin' Bird is that it was actually written by a black group, a group called the Rivingtons, a group out of Los Angeles, a doo-wop vocal group out of Los Angeles. And they wrote the song. And it was actually a combination of two songs of theirs, a song called Papa Mau Mau and a song called The Bird is a Word. Papa Mau Mau was a pretty big regional hit in Los Angeles at that point. I think it may have gotten top 10 in KFWB. But Bird is a Word was the follow-up single to Papa Mau Mau, and I think it also did pretty well regionally. The Rivingtons consisted of Al Frazier, Carl White, Sonny Harris, and Turner Wilson Jr., and those were the members of the Rivingtons. Now, here's the deal. So, as you know, the song was written by the Rivingtons and first recorded by the Rivingtons. But how did the Trashmen, a group from Minneapolis, Minnesota, hear the song and decide to record it? Well, the thing is that the Trashmen hadn't heard the Bird is a Word until a group called the Sorensen's Brothers are playing it at a local club out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And basically what they did is that they heard, I think it was Papa Mau Mau, actually not Surfin' Bird, And you know, they heard Papa Umamel and they decided, you know what? Since both these songs are kind of similar, like, you know, Bird is a Word and Papa Umamel, let's combine them and let's record them together. And that's how they came up with the Surfing Bird, you know, which is actually a combination of two Rivington songs, Papa Umamel and The Bird is a Word. Now, at the time, the Trashmen didn't know that Papa Umamel was a song by the Rivingtons or The Bird is a Word. They didn't know that both songs were actually Rivington songs. And so what they did is that the local disc jockey named Bill Dial was at the gig when they just, and by the way, you know, they started playing Papa Umamel, and they started, you know, improvising The Bird is a Word, and, you know, right in the middle of them doing that song. And then disc jockey Bill Dial heard them do that, and he decided, you know what, you guys got to go to studio record this. So they went in the K-Bang Studios in Minneapolis, and by the way, I believe they had a 3-track tape machine at that point, so I'm pretty sure they did this live, but they also had a pretty good echo, so they managed to basically record an echo on top of the three tracks they recorded, and that's that big echo sound here, the lead vocal. I'm pretty sure that's where they got that from, because they had a big echo chamber at K-Bang Studios in Minneapolis. So so basically what happened was that Bill Dial entered the song into a local Battle of the Bands competition, and then it won. And then basically it also won at a Battle of Bands competition in Chicago. And then that's when the group got signed to Garrett Records. The single sold 30,000 copies in the first weekend. And then it basically got to number 4 in the Billboard Hot 100. Now here's the deal. So this is where it kind of ties into Black History Month. So since the group wasn't actually aware of the fact that both songs were written by the Rivingtons, writing credit for the song Surfing Bird when the single first came out was given to the band's drummer Steve Waugh. Steve Waugh was the guy who actually got credit for writing the songs. Now, this isn't true, because the song was written by the Rivingtons, right? Papa Umamel and The Bird is a Word. It was a combination of both their songs. So here's the deal. So here's what happened. So when the single came out, it became a huge hit. The Rivingtons got word of the fact that this song, that two of their songs were recorded by a group called the Trashmen, a group out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And, they recorded two of their songs, but the Rivingtons were not giving writing credit for it, and they were getting screwed. And so what they did is that I'm pretty sure there was no lawsuit. I'm pretty sure that the Rivingtons didn't sue the Trashmen or their record company, their publishing company, and demand writing credit. I'm pretty sure there was no lawsuit, but the Rivingtons did contact the Trashmen and told them, hey, you know, this is our song, and we're not getting writing credit for it, and the song's a huge hit. So with that being said, once that happened, they were actually awarded writing credit for the song. They fought against the Rivington, the Trashmen, and the Trashmen gave in. It's like, okay, guys, you wrote the song. Here's the publishing. Here's the writing credit, and that was a big deal, because the song was written by African American, singers, African American, and they wrote the song, and it was written by African American people. And they fought against a white group, and they actually were awarded the publishing for the song, and that's a big deal. This white band, the Trashmen, kind of stole from the Rivingtons, and you know, they tried to say, hey, this is our song, but really it wasn't. It was like the Rivington song, and the Rivingtons won, and they were able to get writing credit, which meant that every time the song got played on the radio as an oldie, and when it was used in films and television shows, the Rivingtons would earn all the publishing money from those usages of the song. And so they earned a lot of money from the song later on, and that's really, really cool that they did that. It's amazing that they were able to fight against the Trashmen and win, and that's really, really cool. I'm very happy that that happened. It's kind of just show you, it's sort of a civil rights kind of a thing with in music, in a sense, because the Rivingtons were a black group, the Trashmen were a white group, and you know, the Rivingtons won because they were awarded writing credit and they got the publishing for the song. And, you know, and the trash men tried to screw them over and say it was their song, but they weren't successful at doing that. And so therefore, the Rivingtons won, the trash men lost. And the trash men didn't earn any money from the song, but the Rivingtons did. So it's really, really cool. But yeah, so it does kind of, you know, tie in with Black History Month because, you know, they really, you know, the Rivingtons fought against the trash men and they won. That's really cool. So that concludes this week's episode. So if you're wondering, did this group have another hit? Yes, they did. And unfortunately, the next hit they had was just as worse as the first one they had. It was a song called Bird Dance Beats. Pretty bad, to be honest with you. But to be honest with you guys, the B-side of Surfin' Burn actually isn't a bad song. It's a pretty good surf rock song called King of the Surf Guitar. It's actually not King of the Surf, sorry. It's not King of the Surf Guitar is a Dick Dale song. King of the Surf, that's the B-side of Surfin' Bird. It's actually not that bad, but man, Surfin' Bird is pretty bad, to be honest with you. But it is really cool that the Rivingtons were able to earn some money off of the song because they wrote it. And by the way, they were on Liberty Records, and like I said, they mostly had big regional success with Papa Uma and Mount Liberta's work, but not national success. So the song's made into the 40s and 50s on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, but didn't get into the actual top 40. It made like below top 40 and into like in the 50s as well. But yeah, so also the other thing that's kind of notable about the song Surfin' Bird is that it was actually in the top 10 just as the Beatles were taking over. I mean, actually, 60 years ago around this time, because around 60 years ago, the Beatles just arrived in the U.S. They were performing on Ed Sullivan, and the Beatlemania was here. I mean, it was mass hysteria all across the country. People were going absolutely crazy over them. And the song was in the top 10 just as that was happening. Like, literally, just as the British invasion was happening, the Beatles were taking over. And then a month or two later, you had the Dave Clark Five, you had, Billy J. Cream and Dakotas, you had Peter and Gordon, and you had Dusty Springfield, you had the Searchers, and, you know, just a month or two later, I mean, the British invasion was happening, and it was here to stay, really. And this song was in the top 10 just as the Beatles were just, it was just massive, massive hysteria all across the country. So that's the other thing to keep in mind about this song. And it's kind of interesting because these guys were a self-contained band before the Beatles, yet they managed to have a top 10 just as the Beatles were taken over in America. But they didn't, I don't think they wrote, I mean, Bird Dance Beat, I think it's an original song, but it's pretty derivative of the last hit song they had. And it's pretty bad, to be honest with you. But they were able to have another hit after Surfin' Bird because it easily could have been a one-hit wonder. But still, it's not great. I mean, it really, really is. I wouldn't recommend listening to it, guys, because they even still kept the Pablo Mamau, which is a thing from the Rivington. So Bird Dance Beat is pretty derivative of the Rivington still, and it's not great. But yeah, so that's kind of the thing is about the Trash Men. But, you know, it's so funny how influential the song is if you look at some of the later examples of, like, punk rock, like the Stooges, and, the Sex Pistols and the Ramones and that kind of music. Like, if you look at punk rock later on, you can kind of trace the origins of punk rock. I mean, kind of trace back to the song Surfin' Bird because it has all the elements of punk rock. It has that real angsty, angry, loud, bitey lead vocal. And it's got the heavy drums and the real heavy guitars, a real heavy emphasis in the snare, and the ride. So it's pretty much influential in the punk rock genre. But yeah, so that concludes this week's episode. And before we go on, I want to share you guys a little bit of information about K Bank Studios for a minute, because it's actually a pretty cool studio. They actually offered some really neat deals for local bands at that time. So here's the deal. So like I said, they had 3-track recording technology, and their address is 2121 Washington Avenue North, and that's where they recorded. That was the original location of the studio. This is what they were offering to local bands. For $395, you got 3 hours of the studio, 1,045s, and 50 promo packages delivered to radio stations in the Midwest. For $1,000, an artist could record an entire album, which is pretty cool. For $1,000, that ain't bad. And they also booked commercial jingles and film scores from 4 to 3 a.m. And then, some commercials. And so the studio during the day was booked for commercial jingles and film scores. But from 4 p.m. to 3 a.m., that's when rock bands came in and recorded demos and albums. And they also had an ear picture room that contained a file of 5-minute tape recorders or performers listed in Twin Cities Town Directory. And then people looking to hire a particular kind of voice could go listen to sample tapes in the audition room. So they actually had audition rooms, which is pretty fucking cool. And basically, when the trash, and by the way, when the trash man needed the flip side to serve him Bird in a hurry, and Larry LaPoole was at the recording studio, and he thanked Will Jones, inspired him to write several songs that he wrote, and they turned to Larry, who in turn to the column, you know, went to his vocabulary, and they came up with the song King of the Surf. And they said it was the best surf song ever, in his opinion. Larry also wrote several of the songs in the Bone, which is the flip side of Bird Dance Beat, which is one of the new songs on the new LP, including My Woody and Sleeper. And so it was in top 10 by January 13, 65. And like I said, the Trashmen made no money off this, because like I said, you know, the Ruingtons are wanting to make money off of this. And basically, the party for the song was held at K-Bank Studios, hosted by officials from SOMA, including distributor Garrett Records and producer K-Bank. The party was attended by disc jockeys, record peddlers, and a few young persons who functioned was the dance of Surfing Bird. And like I said, they had Ampex recorders, which is 1, 2, and 3-track echo chambers, 3 studios, air-conditioned Telefunken, RCA, Electro Voice, Sonny Mike's Hammond Organ, Celeste, 2 grand pianos, Duquesne, Tone Generator, Line Equalization, Scully Mastering, Lathe, completely automated recording, pressing plant. So they were a fully equipped studio. They had a lot of stuff, which is really, really cool. Some of the interesting things. So that was when the song was in the top 10. In January 64, just as the Beatles were taking over, like literally weeks before the Beatles had the top 10 spot with I Want to Hold Your Hand. And I believe the song was recorded on July 28th, 1963. So it was recorded quite some years after that. So Emil Heischler was along with his brother Dan, they owned SOMA Records, and that's when they had Dave Dudley come in and record 6 days in the Road, and later on Liar Liar by the Castaways. And if you're wondering who K-Bank is, K-Bank is actually a guy, the wife of Vernon Charles Bank, and they were both co-owners of the studio. And that was where the name comes from. Yeah, so that's some cool information about the studio where the song was recorded by the Surfing Bird, and that concludes this week's episode. So that concludes part 2 of episode number 238 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you learned some really cool and interesting facts about the Trashmen and the Rivingtons, and you never really knew anything about them, and, you know, even if you don't like the song, maybe you found out some interesting cool facts about the song you didn't know about, and that kind of piqued your interest, and you're around my age last millennial, definitely email me at samltwilliamicloud.com. You can also follow me, reach out to me on Instagram and TikTok at iHeartOldies. Now, as I said earlier in this episode, I just launched a new merch line for the premium version of this podcast with the catchphrase Fly on the Wall Stories. Yeah, you can find a link to that in the text description of this podcast, as well as a link to the premium description version of this podcast. Guys, I'm still planning on releasing an episode a month for the premium version of this podcast. So I'd really, really appreciate if you guys could check it out. So that way you don't miss out on all these interview episodes I'm doing, because what you would get is exactly what the slogan says for the premium versions podcast, which is just flying on the wall stories from people that were there who were making music back in the 60s and were actually around and doing sessions back then, and, you know, who were there for those songs. But yeah, so you can find a link to that in the text description of this podcast. And as a bonus, later on this year, you'll get some videos of some of these interviews, which are really, really cool. I want you guys to watch those, and that's pretty neat. But yeah, so Link to those in the text descriptions of this podcast. Also, what you can find is the official Spotify and YouTube playlist for this podcast. And for those of you who are kind of newbies to the show, I don't play any music on the show. I only talk about songs. So if you want to find the actual songs to talk about on the show, please go check out the Spotify and YouTube playlist of this podcast. They'll be able to keep track of each song I talk about. And after part one and two is done, I select a new song to talk about. And you'll find those in the Spotify and YouTube playlist for this podcast. And the link to those are in the text descriptions of this podcast. And as well as the link to my last EP. And I got to be honest with you guys. Those songs are pretty much a moment in time, because things have changed a lot since I wrote those songs. I mean, for example, like Too Much to Drink. I did hear back from her eventually, but the conversation wasn't great, and basically, it was just unfortunate, but I don't think she really likes me, but at least, you know, but the song was in the moment, you know, it really, really was, but yeah, so, and also, the Guru Girl, which I wrote about a YouTuber, someone's ripping off her content now. Someone's stealing her ideas and incorporating into her own videos, which kind of sucks. So she kind of lost the uniqueness that she really had as a YouTuber and as a content creator. But yeah, so anyways, that's what you can find in the text description of this podcast, as well as a link to the last the Redbubble merch store, which is the old one, which is Key Things Groovy, and that still works too for the free version as well. So, thank you. I'm Sam Williams, and thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Till next week, or till next time, please keep things groovy.